Currently, it is 20 degrees outside our studios here in downtown Coshocton, and this hour is a paid commercial broadcast with Coshocton Environmental and Community Awareness. We do have on the telephone, at the invitation of Coshocton Environmental and Community Awareness, Bill Baker. He is an organizer with the No Frack Ohio Coalition, and good morning, Bill. Thank you for being with us today.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on the show.
Bill, can you give us an overview about the No Frack Ohio Coalition and what you're all about?
Sure. And let me clarify a little bit. The No Frack Ohio Coalition is a loosely knit umbrella of many organizations across the state of Ohio. The organization that I'm primarily involved with is called Frack Free Ohio, and we're based out of Mansfield or Richland County, Ohio, and serve a several county area. Currently, our focus is on two points. You know, hydraulic fracturing is a very extensive challenge, from the road use agreements to water consumption to the drill cuttings and landfill issues, the extraction process itself, and then the waste issue. And we are primarily focusing on the waste issue, the injection wells, and what's happening to Ohio and our communities because of this need to dispose of the hydraulic fracturing waste.
And how long has your group, Frack Free Ohio, been together?
We formed late in 2011 when there were two injection wells permitted for the city of Mansfield. And we came together at that time and worked with city government to take some steps to protect our community.
What are some of the specific concerns about fracking and injection wells?
Well, the Class II well program started in the early 1980s, and it was primarily designed for oil field waste. Many of us in Ohio have seen the jack pumps out in the farmers' fields and the large storage tanks where they're extracting resources from the Clinton sandstone strata. And along with that comes brine, and this is from old salt seas that are underneath the surface of the earth, and it's not usable to the oil and gas industry, and is considered waste. So the injection wells were developed to pump this waste back down into the earth, and it's just a wellbore drilled into the rock, and they pump it. The old injection wells at gravity-fed or low pressure. The concern comes in with today's need for the vast amount of waste to dispose of millions of gallons. Last year in Ohio, almost 600 million gallons were injected into the earth. And some new wells are being built, which are questionable. There was earthquakes in Youngstown because of the high pressure, high volume wells. But a major concern is that some of these old Clinton sandstone wells are being converted into toxic waste wells, and many times the residents of those communities are not aware that this transition has taken place.
What have there been any accidents or any issues where the water that has been the injection water has contaminated drinking water or water source?
Yeah, there certainly have, and there's more and more situations arising. Just recently, this past week, an oil and gas man by the name of Ben Lupo in Youngstown pled guilty to the discharge of fracking wastewater into the Mahoning River. Now, unfortunately, we're not fully aware of what chemicals are in this waste, and they don't have to disclose to us the nature of the waste material. So a spill occurring, you know, a ground spill or contamination below the ground level, we can't always correlate where those chemicals are coming from.
Does the EPA have regulations regulating injection wells?
No, they do not.
No regulations at all?
In Ohio, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources has primacy over the wells, and due to some exemptions that were passed at the federal level in 2005 under the Clean Energy Act, or the energy budget at that time, it basically exempts the oil and gas industry from EPA regulations.
So are there any EPA or any government entity then that has regulations either on a local level anywhere or across Ohio or the country concerning injection wells?
Not to my knowledge. Don't specifically quote me on that. I'm not knowledgeable on federal operations. I know that they do have some authority once an accident takes place, and they were involved in the Youngstown incident as far as cleanup goes. But I think it's a major sticking point with a lot of people that we want to rely on our state and federal agencies, but in this particular instance, there isn't anything to rely on.
What are the goals of Frack Free Ohio and or the No Frack Ohio Coalition when it comes to fracking and injection wells?
Well, as I said, we've got legislation introduced at the State House, House Bill 148 and Senate Bill 178, which would prohibit fracking waste in Ohio. Now, that's a pretty strong measure, but what we're trying to do is raise awareness of this kind of a hidden issue and make people more aware of what might be disposed of in their communities. In Mansfield, we passed an Environmental Bill of Rights. We are a charter government, and through a charter amendment and a vote of the people, we passed a resolution that returns local control to us. It gives us a say in the decision-making process. One of the major concerns is that if ODNR issues a permit and an individual has leased or purchased land, they can build an injection well almost anywhere that they would like to without approval of the residents in the area or the city government. So our goal is to raise awareness of the issue and try to empower communities to pass some type of a resolution protecting their own community.
What are some of the specifics of the legislation that was passed in Richland County?
Okay, it's based on the Ohio Constitution, and we were fortunate enough that our city council and our law director took notice of this threat. Our law director actually said that it was one of the gravest threats he had ever seen to come before our city government. So it's based on the Ohio Constitution, and as written, it gives us the right to sustainable water, the right to clean air, the right to peaceful enjoyment of home, and the right to a sustainable energy future. Those were the key points, and although they were directed at, you know, giving us, again, local control regulating injection wells, it's a much broader message as far as the renewable energy component goes.
I would suspect that the energy companies would claim that even while they're practicing their processes that they do it cleanly and that they do provide or allow for clean water and clean air. Has that been the response?
Yeah, you're correct, and I think it's important to note that the conventional extraction method of drilling a bore down into a pool of oil and having it pushed out through natural forces is almost non-existent today. Almost every extraction technique that we have is considered unconventional extraction. And so it creates many more hazards, and it is not very sustainable. Nick mentioned that we're reaching a peak. The cost of fossil fuels is going up and the impact on our environment as well. And it almost seems like, they're clinging, last gasp, clinging to old ways when they say that they're not consuming other natural resources that are important to us, such as clean water, clean air, and fertile soil.
What are some of the other goals, missions of your organization or issues that you address or deal with?
We focus on the positive. If we don't want unconventional extraction, what do we want? And last year we were involved in helping our legislators uphold what's known as Senate Bill 221 that was passed in 2008. That is Ohio's clean energy portfolio, and not only does it have a renewable generation component where 12.5% of renewable energy will be introduced into the grid by 2025, but also an energy conservation component. So some of our work involves teaching people how to lessen the need for our current fossil fuel technology, coal, oil, and other resources that are running out. A personal note, over the past 2 years since I became very aware of this issue, I've been able to cut my electric bill by almost 70%. So I'm happy to get my electric bill nowadays.
What are your thoughts on, I guess, alternative, is what we call them, the energy sources, such as solar, wind, maybe hydropower? What are your thoughts on those types of energy and maybe others and our future of energy consumption here in the U.S.?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on the matter, and I do, a lot of my focus is on net metering, which is generation before the meter or home use. And I found solar to be extremely viable and very simple for folks to implement. Now, there are successful initiatives in Ohio for wind farms. There's a certain carbon footprint that comes with creating, you know, the construction, transportation, and assembly of a windmill versus solar, which has a lessened impact. Ohio, I just read in a recent Dayton Business Journal report that Ohio solar energy jobs increased by about 30% from 2012 to 2013, and Ohio is currently ranked 8th in the nation for solar energy jobs.
And solar energy jobs would be what, manufacture of solar panels? What are some of the jobs that are associated with that industry?
At this time, I think it's primarily with installation and maintenance of solar systems.
And what are the barriers to, I hope we're not getting too far off the topic here, but what are the barriers to solar energy and wind energy and cleaner forms of energy? Why don't we see more of it?
Well, I think lobbying would have a lot to do with that. And I can give you an example that last year we worked hard to defeat Senate Bill 58, which was funded by First Energy and some other electric companies in Ohio. You have to realize that this energy portfolio that was passed, for every dollar that the major energy companies put into this program, which they're required to do, it saves us $3 on our electric bill. So if anyone lost 60% of their business, of course it's going to create problems. So last year they attempted to defund our clean energy portfolio. They failed. We were able to write our legislators and testify, and they decided to keep in place our renewable energy portfolio. But I think public perception is part of the problem. There's a lot of PR surrounding negative things about sustainable energy that aren't quite true.
Solar energy, for example, a typical house, if we install solar panels on our roofs, is that typically enough to fulfill the energy needs of a typical home? I know it's a broad question, but I guess my question is, how viable is it, in fact?
Well, at this time, and that's a major concern, to outfit your home completely and have that money return to your pocket is somewhere around 12 to 15 years. So a lot of folks are unwilling to go completely solar or completely off the grid, as they say, at once. What I've done in my own home is supplement it with solar lighting so that I'm not relying on the grid completely. And again, my focus is more in that area of a simpler ways to get comfortable with solar, I think is the best way to put it. I know when we had a recent power outage here and my lights were still on, I felt pretty good about that. So again, the net metering and the ability for folks to maybe put a few hundred dollars into a small supplemental system at this point is more viable for most folks than spending $15,000 to $20,000 to retrofit their home completely.
We are talking today with Bill Baker. He is a community organizer with No Frack Ohio, a part of the No Frack Ohio Coalition, and we'll be back right after these words. Mostly cloudy, not as cool, with highs around 50 degrees. It's 21 degrees in downtown Coshocton, and this hour is a paid commercial broadcast with Coshocton Environmental and Community Awareness. We have Nick Teddy and Tim Kettler from that organization here in the studio with us. On the phone, Bill Baker with Frack Free Ohio. And Bill, back to injection wells once again. What are some of the other issues concerning injection wells that you're currently dealing with?
Well, as Nick mentioned, we take in a lot of waste from out of state, and that is one of the primary concerns. Over the last couple of years, we've been meeting a loose coalition of grassroots leaders and some state national organizations to look at Ohio and see what the most pressing issue was. And we kind of developed this saying that if you create the waste, you should keep it. And if there's communities that want the benefits from extraction, there's a lot of money involved in allowing your land to be leased and allowing the extraction process to go on. It doesn't seem fair that the waste generated from that is taken to other communities and disposed of there.
Why is it taken to other communities?
Well, partly because of Ohio's lax laws that allow it to be brought in and disposed of very cheaply. Out of the almost 600 million gallons of waste that were brought in last year, ODNR received 1.8 million for permitting of this. Now, they received more money. It's a nickel per barrel in-state waste generated, but 20 cents per barrel of out-of-state waste generation. So for about 40 gallons of waste being brought in, we receive 20 cents when it's brought in from out of state.
So is there legislation or pending legislation concerning making Ohio standards equal or higher than other states or other areas?
Yeah, we have. With as I mentioned previously, House Bill 148 addresses the issue of the hydraulic fracturing waste. And which, again, it's important to clarify, oil field waste and the flowback waste from a hydraulically fractured well are two completely different types of waste. And those wells that have been used as Class II wells for oil field waste, we don't feel are capable of handling the out-of-state waste and the high volumes of waste. Let me look at some numbers here. State and federal records reveal that during the years 2007 to 2010, one out of every six injection wells failed inspection. And alongside that, our state agency responsible for that, the ODNR, doesn't have the manpower to go out and inspect injection wells. So, I don't know what the full solution is, but like I said before, here in Mansfield, we took a local control stance that we had the right to say no, based on our local government and the will of the local people.
And what else would you like to share with us about the bill about injection wells?
I think what would be most important for the Coshocton community to know is that it's important to engage your local legislators and attend city council meetings, to call them and get the facts on injection wells. They contain toxic chemicals. It's not safe, and that more protection is needed for local communities.
All right, we need to take another break. We will be back around one more time with Bill Baker. He is a community organizer with No Frack Ohio and organizer of Frack Free Ohio. We'll be back right after these words. It is 9:45, and this hour is a paid commercial broadcast with the Coshocton Environmental and Community Awareness. And our guest on the telephone is Bill Baker, organizer of Frack Free Ohio. Bill, first of all, thank you for being with us today. Are there any events or anything coming up with your group, your organization, that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Sure, Mike, and thanks for having me on today. I hope folks got some important information from my talk. And as Nick mentioned, they have their event coming up on May 17th, Living on the Shale. I would definitely urge folks to come to that. And my group, with a couple other state organizations, is holding a networking and a get-together in Columbus next week called Don't Waste Ohio, Legislator Accountability Day. And anyone from the public's welcome to come and meet up with us. We'll be in the Galbraith Pavilion, which is underneath the Ohio Theater right near the State House. So we hope to see some folks there, and there'll be information tables available for anyone that has more questions about injection wells or fracking in general.
Bill, thanks again for being with us today.
Thank you, Mike. Have a great day.
That's Bill Baker, organizer with Frack Free Ohio, and we will be back with Nick Teddy and Tim Kettler from Coshocton Environmental and Community Awareness once again right after these words. It is 9:49, and we are back once again on our paid commercial broadcast with Nick Teddy and Tim Kettler from Coshocton Environmental and Community Awareness, and we've been speaking with Bill Baker from Frack Free Ohio. Nick, Tim, what else would you like to share with our listeners today?
Well, Mike, Bill brought up an interesting point. If you generate the waste, you ought to live with it, and unfortunately, that I'm not that comfortable with that anybody has to live with it in their backyard. that NIMBY syndrome of not my backyard just isn't going to work for us on a larger community. So we need to deal with this. And, you know, when you talk to folks, and rightfully so, we talk in terms of the economy and what kind of jobs is this going to create for us. And that's the overall picture. Well, the waste stream doesn't create a heck of a lot of jobs for anyone. The injection wells are low manpower, basically automated. A lot of the drilling crews come from out of state. That's very specialized type of work. And when we talk about state revenue, that is capped at 500,000 barrels. Now, here in Coshocton County through 2013, we accepted nearly 1.3 million barrels, which state revenue was capped at 500,000. So over 700,000 barrels of waste came in that the state received no revenue. And even when the state is receiving this revenue, none of that revenue is shared locally. So we're not really getting at the heart of what benefits the community economically, especially here in Coshocton, where traditionally we've relied on tourism and outdoor pursuits, hunting and fishing and agriculture, all of which are in the direct line of fire when we talk about issues that affect our clean water. When Nick and I and others who are involved with this nonprofit came together to deal with the issue of shale gas development, we realized there was really no organization here in the county that advocated for the environment, and not just in terms of driving down the road and seeing litter picked up, which we are applying for the Adopt a Highway program as well, and hopefully we can make a contribution in a very real way, but when we think of quality of life issues, I'm a transplant here to Coshocton County of some 30 years, and I moved here for a reason, and it's the quality of life that attracted me here. It's a beautiful place to live. I live on a little dirt road, and that means a lot to me. And this type of heavy industrialization isn't confined in traditional industrial areas like we're used to. This is heavy industrial activity in rural areas. On my little one-lane dirt road, if you can imagine what your neighborhood looks like when 1,000 tractor trailers come in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, just to haul the water in that it takes to do one frack on one well, which may be fracked up to 18 times, and that's a conservative 5 million gallons. There's wells in Carroll County that have used 11 million gallons for one frack alone. That doesn't account for the bulldozers moving in, the tankage moving in, the gravel moving in, and hauling the wastewater out. So quality of life issue is a big part of this particular issue on gas development, but what we're trying to do here in Coshocton is raise an appreciation for what we have around us in a way that is sustainable, rather than just looking first priority, how many jobs can we get out of it? It's how can we live with it? How can our children live with it in the future? And real sustainability is what is going to provide us with a stable economy and quality of life, obviously.
Now, looking at the big picture beyond the borders of Coshocton County or even the United States when it comes to meeting our energy needs, what do you believe are the long-term solutions as far as less reliance on fossil fuels? If we rely less on fossil fuels, we either have to A, use less energy, period, or find other sources.
Well, for sure, conservation is the first key element and of any energy program that we develop. From the mid-90s to the mid-2000s, California, through a very aggressive conservation program, held their per capita energy use at a stable limit for 10 years. You know, that coming during a time of fair prosperity and where people have more disposable dollars at their use and tend to enjoy life a little more in ways that are perhaps more energy consuming. So, you know, conservation is the first key. And it is a reprioritization of what is important to us. You know, is a healthy future in a sustainable manner that grows into something that we can learn to live with, or is it a short-term solution of putting a Band-Aid on something for energy extraction that occurs in a bubble, and pretty much if you drive down towards Athens, go ahead and drive through Gloucester, and that kind of scene is what you see. So it's real important that we start to change what we expect and what we can do to produce a better quality of life.
And what are your thoughts on solar energy and wind energy to meet electric needs in the future?
Well, it is very doable. 37%, I think, 37% of all new generation capacity has come in renewables through the past year. So it is happening. Go down to Barnesville. The wastewater treatment plant has solar panels on that city property to generate electricity. Go right across the street from the injection well. This is such a great picture to see the injection well on one side of the road and Dr. Dar's solar bank on the other side of the road. There is the problem, in my perspective. There's the solution right across the road. So it is doable. But, you know, we can live without natural gas. Be uncomfortable. We can do it. But can we live without clean water? And that sounds like a pretty black and white choice. But if you really examine the issue and get past the rhetoric on both sides to see if we have a choice between clean water and making an adjustment in the way we live and what we value, well, I would opt for the clean water myself.
All right. Tim, Nick, we have a couple minutes left. Anything else you'd like to share with us about your organization or upcoming events?
Yes, I would like to say that the website that you can find out all this information on the event as well as contact us. We have information, videos. We'll gladly distribute it all under license or through the public domain. The website is www.cec, that's Charles Edward Charles, aware, aware.org, cecaware.org. There's information about the event there. As Nick had said, we are waiting to hear the status of our nonprofit tax-exempt application. If you are of a mind to contribute to our efforts or join in our efforts, you can contribute at CECA, CECA, P.O. Box 295, Warsaw, 43844. Contact us through the website if you'd like to become a part of what we're doing or if you would like to become a member of CECA. And we would look forward to hearing from folks who take an interest in where we together take this and our environment in the future.
All right. Anything else we need to touch on before we wrap up, Nick?
No, I'm just curious about, for people who are curious about Legislature Accountability Day that is going to be held on, I believe, April 2nd, there are a couple of phone numbers that you could call to get some information. There is the Buckeye Forest Council, which will be involved in this effort, and they are at 614-487-9290. And Food and Water Watch out of Cincinnati, and they are at 513-394-6257.
All right, and once again, the Earth Day Festival coming up April the 6th from 10 to 2 at the Kenyon Athletic Center. I'll see any other activities we've left out here. Anything else you want to touch on?
We would look forward to being back on the radio on April 22nd, which is Earth Day. Our guest will be Teresa Mills, organizer for the Center for Health, Environment, and Justice. And then again on May 7th with Gwen Fisher, who has had a considerable experience with pipelining, and John Williams, who can tell us and will tell us about what life is like next to a 24/7 shale development operation.
All right, very good. That's Nick Teddy and Tim Kettler from Coshocton Environmental and Community Awareness. So that's our time for the morning.